I'm kind of excited about this because we've got two what I'll call keynote caliber guys sitting up here that we get to talk to about conversational marketing and why it's important for anybody who's either managing a brand, a product, a service, or just themselves online, and how you want to manage your reputation and why it's important to engage and what are the best ways to engage. So I have here on my immediate right John Battelle, you know, who is what I'll call all about ads in a lot of different ways. According to ValleyWag, John is a guy with a permatan. You guys no more questions about that. He's too sophisticated to lie, although he will stretch the truth occasionally. He's also the author of The Search, which was a best-selling book about Google. He was the founder of the Industry Standard. No Industry Standard jokes, please. He's also the founding editor of Wired, and he's the current founder of FM Pub. He's also the number four John on Google we discovered today. Not bad. When you consider that there's John Lennon, John Kerry, John Kennedy. Were you ahead of John Kennedy?
Well, that's he kind of predates the Google deal.
There we go. And then on my further right here is Tony Schneider, who I've done a number of things with. But Tony is currently the CEO of Automattic, which is the beloved parent company of WordPress. Any love for WordPress out there? All right. In the house. That's good. Tony, before that, was the CEO of Oddpost, a company that I had, was on his board of and led the investment in that was sold to Yahoo, great company. Really kind of kicked off a lot of this Web 2.0 stuff, Ajax-based architectures. He's currently also a venture partner at True. And to trump John Battelle, he's the number one Tony with an I on Google. So there you go. All right, so let's jump into this.
Who are you?
Oh, and excuse me, I forgot, I'm Tony Conrad, and I'm the CEO, founder of Sphere, and happy to be moderating this panel. And we do want to encourage you guys to start firing off questions, you know, as early as 5 minutes into this.
So can I ask one?
Yeah.
What does why marketers need to work with people media mean? we spent like four phone calls and a couple of meetings trying to figure that one out.
Well, why don't you kick it off? Why don't you tell us about conversational marketing?
Never stick your neck out. When we talked, we were trying to figure out, you know, we're all in this business of, you know, with Sphere. How many of you guys know about Sphere, seeing the widget, the Sphere widget? Those of you who haven't will. It's a really neat kind of way of navigating conversations between various sites and media. And then with WordPress, certainly, and with all the sites that that Federated Media, my company, works with, there's something about all of those sites as media that strikes me as a bit distinct from what I've termed packaged goods media, right? And packaged goods media is like the book I wrote. That's a packaged good. Like, there's no more one-to-many, really highly manicured package than a book or a magazine or a television show. But obviously, since the early 90s, we've been talking about this interactive media, and it's really going to change everything. And the marketers can't quite, you know, couldn't get their hands around it really until very recently. And we've seen the rise of a lot of, you know, really well expressed and more importantly embraced by as useful and highly valuable by audiences forms of media like WordPress. YouTube, all the social networks that have taken off in the last few years, like MySpace and others, Facebook, and blogs. And what struck me as important about all this media was that it was driven not by this idea of dictation, but by this idea of conversation. And in fact, it was also driven by the idea that as important to the medium was the audience participation in it, what Tim O'Reilly calls the architecture of participation, as the creation of a perfect package of media to be pushed at you was the conversation back and forth with an author. In the case of Federated, we look for authors who are having conversations with a robust community or something like that, or a site like Dig that is sort of creates a platform for a conversation to occur. So that's kind of what I view people media as is conversational media. Media is driven by this idea of dialogue. And it strikes me that all of us up here are kind of deeply involved in that. I think we're supposed to talk about whether or not anyone wants to actually support it in marketing.
Yeah, Tony, what's your take on, you know, I've always said Tony's kind of the anti-advertising guy, a guy who's not, you know, throwing ads up on WordPress. You know, what's your take on this?
I wouldn't call myself the anti-advertising guy. I don't hate all ads. I just hate dumb ads, I guess. And unfortunately, there are a lot of them out there. But that's actually not the reason why we haven't put ads on WordPress.com. I think that's what you're referring to. When we started WordPress.com, it was one of the big problems that we saw, and it's still a problem today, were spam blogs. And really, people starting blogs, because it's getting so easy to start a blog, and it's such a great vehicle to get a bunch of search engine traffic to your site, that there's so many people are starting blogs purely for the ads and really just trying to slap any kind of content on there and then put AdSense on there and hope that you make a little bit of money. And this has been a big problem. And we did a couple of things to combat it. We built an anti-comment spam product called Akismet to help sort of keep the spam off of blogs themselves. And we decided on WordPress.com to have a policy of no ads. And that was really designed to keep the bloggers away initially and make sure that if you start a blog there, you're doing it because you're into blogging. You want to write. That's the reason you're there. You're not doing it to make money. And it's been a very successful strategy. We have 750,000 bloggers a year later that attracted 35 million unique readers last month. And again, all without any commercial incentive behind it. Now, that said, we're getting to a point where some of those bloggers are saying, wait a second, I'm starting to have a lot of page views. Is there some way of making some money off of this? And we're starting to think about how to do that and how to do it in a way that isn't just take the ads that are out there or take AdSense or something sort of predictable and put it on there and hope that it works. Because I personally feel that there's got to be something better out there, because they're clearly, blogs are a more interesting medium. Like you said, they're very conversational. They're very authentic and genuine, and that's why people like them. They're unedited. And today's advertisement is about as far away from authentic as you can get. It's kind of fake. It's phony. It's trying to sell you something. And I think marketers still have a long way to go before they sort of cross over and try and truly participate in this new type of media. And personally, I would say until they do that, I'd rather not put ads on the blog, certainly on my personal blog, just to have them. I'd rather wait until a form of advertisement emerges that is truly a good match for the medium and something that we can stand behind.
Okay, so, you know, I think we have a question around, you know, what forms of advertising are important, and we can get into that, and I think you might have some examples of that. But, you know, kind of hone in on the real question. If you're out in this audience and you're a marketer, which I probably most
people
are.
Wait, how many people out there are marketers? Oh, cool.
Do we have a product for you?
No, I just think that's cool. My point is, look, advertisers are human beings. A bunch of you just raised your hands, and they read blogs, and they like blogs, and they like WordPress, and they like, you know, they might have profiles on MySpace or whatever, and they see that a bunch of other people who they consider to be part of a community that they want to be in conversation with the products and services they create, are also reading blogs and interacting in this kind of media, and that's really the three pillars of a great publication. I don't care if it's in print or if it's online or if it's a television show, but a media product is, if it's a commercially driven product, in other words, if the person who's creating the content wants to pay the mortgage, right, which as an author I do, you need three things. You need the author, you need the audience, and you need the advertiser. You need the three of them, and ideally they're in a conversation that in which all are being fed. It's not where the weight is like marketer, you know, and they are calling the shots. And when I worked at the LA Times, there was no way ever in anything that I wrote at the LA Times I had any input on the ads next to the articles I wrote. Of course not. That's crazy, right? But I would often see my pieces sandwiched between the huge ads and just feel like I wish that the balance was a little more equal. And one of the principles at the company I run is that every single advertisement has to be approved and accepted, including the creative, by the author before it shows up on the site. Now, that means that the author still might decide to take ads that are dumb. But you wouldn't, right? And so that's, I think, a really different power structure when all of a sudden the marketer has to have permission from the author before the ad appears.
How have your advertisers reacted to that?
It was really hard in the beginning. Actually, the guy I hired to run sales, who came over from CNET, was like, "Are you crazy, Battelle?" And I said, "No, actually, I'm convinced that this is going to be a good thing." And it turns out now that it is a really good thing, because when you think about it, if you're a marketer and you want to go into a site like, you know, Boing Boing or Ars Technica or something like that, you don't want to not have permission to be in that space, because otherwise these folks, you know, if they're not aware you're there, then you're kind of an interloper, right? And you haven't really been invited to join the site and the conversation on the site. So we have had, I would say, 1 or 2% rejection, a little higher on the creative. Like, whoa, that's not that creative. You're a good, cool company, but that creative's no good. And the companies go back and change the creative, which is, I think, really neat that you know, that marketers are willing to listen to that.
You've actually had authors who have just said, you know, I don't want that money.
Yeah.
How much? What's the biggest sum of money that an author has turned down?
$35,000.
And why?
In 1 month.
Why?
DRM. Can anyone guess what site that was?
I heard it.
But, you know, I mean, the fact is that there are advertisers who don't fit. And what we say back to the marketer is, look, I think we're doing you a favor by saying, you know, this isn't a fit for this, you know, it might be a demographic fit or a psychographic fit or whatever, like, the, you know, we want men 18 to 34 or whatever. But the fact is, it's not a cultural fit,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's really important that those connections get made. And it's the first step. And the one thing is about most, at least large brand marketers, is they tend to lag audience, right? So we now have I think search is the axis of this, but we have, you know, in the last 5 years, a significant shift towards this kind of media, right? People media or user-generated content.
Ooh, don't say that.
Or, you know, conversational media, whatever you want to call it, social media. And marketers usually lag by a good few years a new expression of audience intent. If you look at search, it's a perfect example, right? When did search take off? It took off 5 years after search started working, right? I mean, 97, 98, Google came out. Alta Vista was pretty good before they junked it up with all the horoscopes and stuff. And you know, but it wasn't until 2002 that search marketing went, right?
Uh-huh.
And you know, marketers were like, I'm not so sure. I want to, you know, I don't get it. Little ads next thing, I don't get it.
So to that point, Tony, where do you think we are in the adoption cycle by marketers? I mean, John's on the front line talking to some of the premier brands in the world and dealing with what I'll say, you know, very much some of the elite authors, you know, in the micro-publishing space. But where do you think we are in the adoption cycle?
I think we're very early on. And actually, we were talking about this a little bit earlier. In addition to ads, there are other things that marketers can do to participate in something like the blogosphere. There are things like RSS and starting a blog yourself, maybe, and trying to build an audience around it. And we've been talking about those kinds of ideas for quite a few years, and I think maybe we're so far ahead and so immersed in those kinds of technologies that to us feels like, come on, why is it taking so long? But I think more likely is that we're sort of in the lull before the real adoption starts to begin, and it's really sinking in at much broader and broader levels. And we are seeing this on the WordPress side, where all of a sudden, even just in the last few months, we're seeing a lot of big mainstream publications, newspapers and magazines, starting blogs much more aggressively. And it's no longer a, should my news page be turned into a blog, or how do I integrate blogging into my strategy? It's just, let's just do some blogs. Let's just get them out there. Let's see what happens, which is a much better approach. And so people have loosened up a lot and they've embraced it more. But I still think we're just seeing the beginnings. And I do think one of the things you just mentioned in search, marketers initially they were sort of perplexed by those ads on the side, right? That was a new type of advertisement and took a while to sink in. And I'm wondering, to my earlier point, shouldn't there be an equivalent like that for blogs and for social networks? It still feels to me like we're just taking and, you know, no offense to what you're doing at FM Publishing, you're doing great things to bring marketers into this space. But I look at the ad campaigns that they're running, and you know, they look pretty timid to me. They're still banner ads. Yeah. Maybe it's a banner ad I can click on and leave a comment or something, but it's not truly, we're not forcing marketers or convincing marketers, to truly join the conversation and have a voice.
This is a very difficult thing to do. I mean, marketers are used to being in charge. The most humbling thing in the world is to go to like Minneapolis or Chicago and go to a big agency there and sit down with a big group of people and get schooled basically on what they want, you know, and mainly what they want is like, so we're talking about, you know, Pepsi or, you know, Gatorade or Quaker Oats or, you know, these are very big brands, right? And they want safety, right? They're all terrified that what they think happened to GM when GM tried something new with the Chevy Tahoe campaign is going to happen to them. They also are afraid that if they go into this conversational media, someone might actually talk about them. You know? and they've all read those books that say all brands are conversations, right? But it's theoretical, you know. But the fact is that brands live in your head, and they are conversations. And I think the reason that Google became such a huge brand is because Google's so conversational, because you use words. You go in and you talk at it, and you say, I want this, and they're words. And then it says, okay, and it reorganizes the whole damn universe for you like that and presents a response, and you're having a dialogue with Google. And when you leave that page, you then, say, go to a brand site that is mute, that doesn't know who you are, and acts as if it doesn't care, right? And so for marketers to move to the model the new model of understanding who you are is a very big shift. And the next thing they want besides safety is they want scale. So it's really expensive for them. They're used to doing packaged goods marketing. So they create one gorgeous 30-second spot, and then they buy $20 million of media, write once, read many, right? And so to do this kind of marketing where they're actually having conversations with consumers and interacting with them as if they might potentially have some value to exchange, which is the core of all business, right, involves human beings or understanding human beings in a way that marketers have not been set up to do yet. So it is a significant shift. But we got lots of examples of it being kind of, you know, if you look at what we do, I would say 80-85% of the stuff that we bring to the sites that we represent is pretty traditional, although I would say it fits much better than you would get without the kind of hand-rolled sales process of sitting down with people and talking about what are your goals, what are the right sites, what's the right creative, what's this audience, and all that stuff, right? Doing that is really hard to scale. It's people, you know, and so you need to, that's why we created federations, so you could get scale, right? But 15 or maybe even 20% of the stuff we're starting to do is really unique, interesting, new forms of units, like RSS within the media unit that distributes a site's blog out into media so that it joins the conversation of wherever the media is placed. Mm-hmm. And we have a bunch of those kinds of new ideas, which we're just trying to see.
I actually think the one you just mentioned, I think that it's worth elaborating on a little bit.
People haven't seen it.
That's my favorite one of the ones I've seen on your sites, where it instead of just being an ad unit that displays an ad, it's the ad unit itself takes in a blog post off of the advertiser's blog, in this case Symantec, and it just shows whatever the latest blog post is. So it's like having a little mini blog running in somebody's sidebar that is constantly refreshed with whatever Symantec wants to talk about.
In this presentation. But I'll find it, damn it. Don't mind the guy behind the curtain.
Well, maybe you can talk to, some non-advertising, but John's John's not very good with the computer, so I apologize for him.
Oh, look, there's the post I'm about to do about Microsoft and Yahoo.
Oh, John also writes posts but sometimes are really manifestos that masquerade as a post. You could read his latest 4,200-word post on conversational marketing.
That was the way I prepared for this panel, is I just wrote all day. Which
is, but Tony, I think, besides advertising, we'll get into some concrete examples here with John in a second, but besides, kind of the straightforward advertising, some of these ideas he's pursuing, what other kind of things have you seen work, in case of WordPress? I mean, you have a business that you're projecting out. You had an example about Foo Camp, I remember, from a while back.
Well, there's definitely the example of you want to be engaged in the blogosphere. Oh, did you find it?
Go ahead. I'll jump back to it.
Just another example, and I think a lot of times, maybe even before you want to jump in and advertise on blogs, or maybe even before you want to jump in and participate by having your own blog and developing your own voice in this, is to just read blogs and participate that way and start to leave comments and figure out what people are saying about you. And again, maybe to a lot of us here, that's kind of obvious. You're setting up RSS feeds that track your name and your company and your competitors, and so you know immediately when somebody talks about you and you can react to it. But I still find a lot of people out there, that's a pretty revolutionary concept. But in our case, the Foo Camp example you mentioned was a very simple one. We Akismet, our anti-spam service, was down at some point. This is a few months ago, and people noticed because lots and lots of spam arrives in their moderation queues. And Robert Scoble, who's a WordPress blogger, wrote a post about it on his blog, and he said, "Hey, Tony's at Foo Camp. Somebody go wake him up in his tent. Something's wrong." It was, of course, early Sunday morning when these things always happen. And I happened to see his post, and I went on. I said, "Hey, I'm awake. We're looking at it." And then we fixed it pretty quickly, and it turned from a "everything's broken, this thing is terrible, the sky's falling" to "wow, this is kind of cool. They actually were paying attention and reacted," and it was turned into a funny story and a good story. So I think that's just one small example, but what we see a lot is even the act of actually responding and acknowledging something is huge, and it in some cases is almost enough. It just... And we see this in our lives all the time, right? You get angry about something, you're at the airline counter, whatever, at the hotel, something goes wrong, and somebody just acknowledges it and listens to you, and you just kind of, okay, I already feel a lot better. And exactly. A lot of times you actually now feel better about the place or about the brand you're interacting with than if it had just gone fine.
But this means that marketers have to learn how to have this conversation. I got in the early days when I was just sort of sussing the business out, talked to a bunch of marketers, and they are like, "Well, now I've got it." Remember, there was this whole like, "Got to start a blog," right? That was like all the I got to have a blog. It was kind of like in 1995 when I got to have a website, right? And every company got a website. And now it's like I got to have a blog. It's like no. You have to have a voice. There's a difference. You have to know how to have a conversation about your brand, right? And so you knew how because you're in this space. But a lot of marketers are terrified of the idea of actually being out there and having a voice. And this Symantec example is a really good example of them having a voice. So they kind of got to get a blog fever, and they started a site called the Symantec Security Response Weblog because that was catchy.
It's like the human
network. I'm going to get myself into some trouble here. I know I am. And it was a good site. The guy who the lead guy who wrote it knew his stuff, and was good at blogging, at writing about his products and answering questions and raising issues and talking about features or whatever he did. But it wasn't getting a ton of traffic, and so they bought a little campaign across FM, including on Digg, saying, "Hey, we're Symantec. We have a blog. Check us out." That's a pretty standard, normal, not particularly new idea. Just, "Hey, we're here." During the same general period of time, the guy posted, and many of you may be aware of this because it was a big story. He posted on the blog that there was this smoldering issue about how were there Mac OS 10 viruses or were there not Mac OS 10 viruses? Could anybody find any? Anyone got one for me, right? And it was sort of a debate that was going on. And he was following it on the site, but he finally posted something that just said, I can't find them. I don't think they're there, And so for an antivirus software company to acknowledge that they're sort of pretty much, sorry, there's nothing we can do. We'd love to sell you some software to fix a problem, but there's not a problem. That was kind of a pretty surprising thing for that, but it was honest. It was true, and the debate had been going on, and he couldn't duck the issue, so he just declared it. Now, that got dug, immediately got dug, and it made it all the way up to the top of the Dig homepage, and of course, what happens when that happens. Everyone is reading, is linking to his site, and all of a sudden, he's getting a lot of link love, and his security response weblog is becoming better known. And then they realized the power of that blogging post, and we took it one step further and created an ad unit. You can see it here, a little ad unit that just that makes a call, the unit itself, wherever they place that unit across the, in any media, and they're all over, not just FM sites, but anywhere, it makes a call back to the blog and pulls the RSS feed and summarizes the post. And so what we saw with the creative when we ran this initially across the FM network was, as opposed to the fatigue that you always have with any traditional ad unit where, you see it, and then you go back to the site and you see it again, and then you just sort of get tired of it and you get blind to it. Because the content kept changing every time the guy posted, the click-throughs started going up, and actually people started seeing the unit as part of the conversation of the site, right? Now, it was in its appropriate place. It was in the advertising area, but it was seen as valuable, and the click-throughs actually started to go up over time, which you never see with creative, right? It always goes down. So that was just a really interesting... And I know that Gabe at Tech Meme is doing something similar, and this idea is starting, spreading around, and I think it's a good idea.
What do you guys think about blogvatorials? Do you guys want a blog? Does everybody know what a blogvatorial is? Does anybody not? It's like an advertorial. What do you, paper post and these kind of ideas that are bubbling up, and I don't want to talk about paper post, but what do you think?
Why? Because you don't want to have a chair throwing fight? So I don't know really who we throw the chairs at. I'm not a humongous fan, personally. However, I don't see it as my job to tell anybody what to do or not to do. And so if someone wants to do that, then I think that they have the perfectly good right to do it. At the end of the day, I think audiences decide whether or not they think the authors, the writers, the producers that they give their attention to are worthy of it. And so I think some audiences are like, he's doing paper post. He's a good guy anyways. I don't care. And others are like, run screaming out the door. So I think it really is up to the individual. But I choose not to do it.
Tony, what are you thinking about that?
I'm probably a little bit more skeptical than that. But also, I think there's a big difference. You mentioned two things, paper post and blogvatorials. I think those are actually quite different because even though... In the end, they're a similar ad unit. They're basically a commercial post that lives inside your blog, and it looks just like any other blog post. But and now, in most cases, they're all labeled as sponsored posts. So there is a disclaimer on it, so you can actually tell the difference, but they're posts. People can comment on them. They can link to them and so on. A paper post, the big difference is with paper posts and similar schemes, the blogger writes them. So it's the same voice, like you said earlier. It's actually the advertiser isn't really part of that. The advertiser just pays the blogger to talk about them, and the advertiser isn't on there themselves. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas with a blogvatorial
usually
or a sponsored post, it is written by an advertiser, and the blogger just says, okay, I'll put this on my blog. And this is like pay content does this, and we just saw last night New West. I think that is a much better idea because that actually – tells the advertiser, look, write something interesting, something is going to get somebody's attention, and it's going to compete against these other blog posts. So it better be in the voice that is attractive to that audience, and it has to stand up within that flow of content. I think if you're paying somebody to write, I think it makes much more sense to do that on your own blog. You can approach a blogger and say, hey, I like what you write. Can I hire you to write over here?
How many of you guys are authors or producers of content? Bunch. Okay. How many of you have ever worked for a company and written something for them? Same number. So, I think the thing that people respond to is that in blogs, it's that sacred space of your voice. And so if your voice in that sacred space, it can be conflated by a reader. And I think that's what people are trying to buy, is that conflation. Even if you label it, even if you make it a different shade and background and whatever you might do, it's the conflation of voice for pay that is the problem. And
I think there has to be.
But I think pay, but right, I mean, shoot, when I was starting out and I was freelancing trying to get through graduate school, you know, I wrote manuals for Sybase. You know, I mean, I did whatever writing I could do to pay the bills. And I also wrote for, you know, for publications, you know, where the ads were here and my writing was here. And I think that, you know, all people who are trying to make it in content production, you know, have to pick, you know, pick where they spend their time. But I do believe that there is this sense of the sacred of the voice that is the...
Yeah, I think to me there's a very, very clear line there. And yeah. I don't think it's a good idea to cross it. It brings up another issue, though, because it kind of moves into the, well, what are the options for people? And I think while it's, you know, what you're doing is great with FM publishing, you have how many publishers, how many bloggers? A few hundred, right?
Oh, no, 120.
120. Yeah. So you have 120 people. What about the other 20 million bloggers out there? And
right now the
answer is AdSense, right? Or some sort of just kind of lowest common denominator solution that's not going to pay
well. I don't think all those 20 million have any interest in advertising anyways. I think once
let's ask that question. So we had a bunch of people raise their hands and their bloggers. Can you just do that again so we can just get a sense? How many people here have a blog? Okay. And how many of you would like to make some money off of that blog? About half.
So I would say
that's a high percentage.
And see, what we're seeing.
Well, we're also at South by Southwest. Just making a point.
I didn't like
my
your
guess
point,
is like
John.
Half of those guys are probably already iPhone.
I got a couple other things on John I'd like
and
to talk
right
about.
There. Yeah, John, I would like to actually be making some money.
Did a little bit more investigative research on you. Where were you on December 13th, 2004?
But anyway. No, it's. I think what we're seeing is there's a certain vacuum out there for that people are starting to fill with other solutions other than AdSense, and I don't think the right one has emerged yet, where clearly there are people who are creating really interesting content and they would like to make money off of it, and they're not quite big enough to join a network like yours, but they're clearly could make more money than what AdSense is giving them. We're also seeing advertisers who are saying, wait, I have a site, I have a blog, I have something. I just want bloggers to talk about it. What's so bad about just paying somebody to make that happen? So there's sort of a lot of people going into it with good intentions. I just don't think the right solution is there yet to be able to say, yes, here's how we connect these two and make it work.
Well, again, it's very interesting because if you look at the intimate and personal nature of this kind of media, and I think it really is pretty intimate. Even sites as large as ours or Boing Boing are intimate and in an important way. Marketers really want to know them. They want to understand them before they put their message there. Even if they don't tailor their message to the site specifically, this is how they understand how to buy right now. Right? We'll sit down, for example, with like BMW, and they'll say, well, here's our target, right? We want men 28 to whatever, 45, and we want this level of household income. And, you know, they put these RFPs, request for proposals, out, and you respond to them, and you're very happy to get the RFPs. And we'll put every single site in the entire FM network that meets those criteria in any defensible way on that response, right? And we'll ship it back to them, and invariably, they'll cut everyone off but four or five. Because they can't keep more than that in their head, right? You can't really truly understand 20 sites as a marketer until you get into a relationship of trust with a trusted third party, right? So now we've been doing this 1 year. Now we're in the space with HP and Microsoft and Intel and all our original tech advertisers that we've been in conversation with for a year now, where they do trust us to start sort of going across the whole federation of technology. But the habit is I really need to understand these sites before I put my message on them, right? And that is a very hard habit to scale to 10 million bloggers, right? Very hard to scale. And so the question is, how do you get to the point where if you're a serious blogger or author or creator of content, is there some sort of I actually call this AM, like FM, AM. Like with FM, we got 18 salespeople and we're out there kicking it all day. But is there some way, and not necessarily like an FM company or anything, but is there some way to say, yes, I'm really serious. Yes, I believe in this set of mores and values, this integrity, you know, it's the kindergarten stuff, you know, correct your errors and I believe in fairness and accuracy and, you know, and I'm not going to, you know, be malicious and, you know, I mean, just basic good blogging practices. I sign up to that. Is there some way to ascribe and then be part of a more valuable chain, so to speak? And Google would argue, well, yeah, actually there is, and it's just the value of the marketplace judging your site by click-through, right? In other words, you put the AdSense up there, and if people click through, it's a better site. But that is really prone to gaming, right? And prone to creation of content that is bait for high click-through. Not that it's not good content, necessarily, but it doesn't do what I think most of you who raised your hands want to do for a living, which is to write about what you care about, what you're passionate about, what wakes you up in the morning.
So we're going to open this up for questions
unless
here.
Unless it's home mortgages and asbestos lawsuits.
In just a minute, but I want just...
Then you're rich.
So what happens, right? I've got one last question, and hopefully we can get some good questions out of the group here. So you've these sites, a lot of your publishers, you know, I read them, your authors, and part of what makes them great sites and why I'm actually addicted to going to them is that they're a little provocative, right? It's not the same cookie-cutter approach, boing-boing and whatnot, and dig and what stories rise to the top and all this. And inevitably, there's going to be a story or comments that are kind of off-color.
Yes.
You know, or
we run into that every so often.
There's a thing, you know, you'd mentioned you had a site that was talking about masturbation. You know, like, you don't have to address that one specifically, but BMW out here, or your IBM or Symantec or any of these great brands, hey, how you do with that?
Yeah.
And if you're one of those folks, you know, are you genuinely concerned about that?
Yeah, I'll give you an example that's from my site, because that way I'm not getting anyone else into trouble. Let me see.
Is this the picture of you with the teddy bear?
We call this the plane crash response. So in March 16th, last year, about this time, I wrote a post asking Microsoft to spin out all of its internet into a separate company so that it could finally get into the MSN business, because I felt that it's been vacillating and never really certain if it wants to support MSN. And I wrote, give me LiveSoft, because Live had come out as a brand, and I was starting to think that maybe they were going to go somewhere with that. And I wrote this post, and I used as an image of what I thought might be broken about the way Microsoft was approaching the world, I used an image from the advertising of the Office campaign where they put dinosaur heads on their customers for not upgrading, right? So if you haven't upgraded to Office, then you're a dinosaur, which I thought was an interesting approach. And so, at the time, Microsoft was the sole sponsor of my site. So imagine that Fast Forward Blogs and the WebEx ad were actually both Microsoft ads, which is exactly what they were. And I don't know, I mean, here I am, the guy running this company, and I don't know why I was not, but I get into, like, writing mode, and I don't know, I must have, like, deep ability to compartmentalize. And so I hit publish, and as we all do when we publish a post, we have that proud moment where we hit refresh and we see our post and we feel like we've accomplished something, right? And I see the post and I look over, and there are the ads with the same creative as the little image that I had just... And I'm like, oh, holy shit. And so I, you know, having been a publisher at the industry standard, I was the publisher responsible for placating advertisers. And an editor at Wired, I was the editor, the deputy editor. I quickly knew there was a conflict in my head going on, and I called Chaz, who is my publisher at Federated, and I said, I just did something that might make Microsoft kind of mad. And he went into what he calls plane crash mode. And so plane crash mode is when there's a plane crash on CNN and they're about to run a United ad, right? And what they do is they pull the ads without telling United, because there was just a plane crash and there's an ad segment and it's, you know, so forget, you know, there's not time to call the agency, call United, you just pull the ads and then you call the agency or the client, in this case Microsoft, it's an agency, and you say, what do you think? Should we put them back up or not? And that's, again, why you need human beings in this process. And so what they did is they said, well, John has a right to express himself, and we may or may not agree with that post. However, let's keep the ads off until he posts a couple more so it pushes down a little bit. And that's what we did. I was running house ads for about a day, and everything turned out fine, and we have a great relationship with Microsoft, and I did get more than a few emails from folks at Microsoft.com saying that wasn't such a bad idea, John.
All right, we had a question right here.
So what you're saying is you have $20,000 to market a consumer product. And how much does the consumer product cost? $20. And who wants to buy? I mean, sorry for being, but who would buy it?
20 to 35-year-old male, well-educated.
A guy like you. There we go.
Wow. I feel like I shouldn't even answer this question because I'm just... Here's my card.
I want to come back to that disclaimer. John's been known to stretch the truth.
No. Let's not get that meme out there. I think I'm a pretty honest guy. Well, there are a lot of things that you can do with that, and basically $20,000 is very easy to blow, and then feel like you've completely wasted your time, and that's, or rather your money and your time. And so that's the difficult thing. I think that if you're on a budget like that and it's really important, that's all you've got to really sit down and think about what is it about my product that people might want to talk about, and really focus on answering that question to the point where you've got it. And then you can come up with a strategy for how you apply that $20,000. It may be that you pick the right blogs and set and put ads to them, invite people into a conversation about the product. It may be that you do no advertising whatsoever, and instead you hire two or three people to do something else. You know, I mean, it's hard to say. I wouldn't say there's a silver bullet at all. Well, with $20,000, you can probably hire a staff member for a number of months, or you know, depending on how full time they are, for a year. And if the product is something that engenders a direct conversation, ask that person to get to transparently, and transparency is one of the keys to this, I think, have a conversation about it online. And to start getting into the, if there is a community around which this product might fit, right, to get into that community and start having a conversation, as long as it's understood that I'm talking because I'm being paid around this particular product. And it may go nowhere, or it may go, but if it goes nowhere, you know within 3 weeks to a month. You haven't blown the whole $20,000. But, I mean, that's just one idea. I don't know. I mean, as we were discussing, maybe there's, you know. But it has to be an honest, transparent conversation. And that's the thing I think most marketers kind of want to outsource oftentimes. Well, I get an agency, and they'll figure out what to say. And I think that often I go to a lot of agencies. And what the agencies are telling me now is that they have to push back to the client and say, no, we have to really understand the business and the product. We have to. We can't just make shit up and throw it up on a 30-second spot anymore. People don't buy it. It gets debunked immediately on the web.
Also to that point, I think what we're seeing, and this is not necessarily a way to spend $20,000, but the people who are the most likely to be able to talk about that product in a genuine way are the people who built it. So if you get really lucky, you have somebody on your product team,
right, good point,
who has a good voice and who wants to be out there and talk about it more. And you just empower them to do it.
Right.
And
that's a good point.
We've seen that work in so many different cases where, and it's completely, you know, it's not even commercial. It's just somebody who's excited about the product they worked on and they're talking about it, and users like it because they get to talk to the person who actually knows something about it instead of some customer support person who's never used the product. And I think that can be really effective.
Marketers are terrified of criticism, but criticism is like the best thing in the world that can happen to a brand, I think, because if you acknowledge it, it's like the example of a hotel you know, clerk at a hotel, when you come in, you go, oh, the shower's cold and everything, you know, and room service is slow and you overcharge me. And they're like, wow, really sorry. You know, let me take care of this for you right now and I'm going to upgrade you or whatever they say. And all of a sudden, it's your favorite hotel, you know. And just because they acknowledge that you had a problem and they fixed it. And there is that opportunity online every single day, but marketers are terrified of criticism.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'm going to jump in a little bit here and then we're going to go to Mary. But you cannot have thin skin in this environment. You absolutely have to have thick skin.
Listen.
And you really have to be able to expose yourself and put yourself out there.
And in any case, it should at least be permatanned.
Or be permatanned. See, now it's gonna come back right now. Here it comes. But you know, we have a story where we had a guy criticize our product, and he was pretty violent with his language, using, you know, some nasty words, and I thought it was unnecessary. And I just replied in the comment stream that I thought it was just inappropriate. If he had an issue, here's my phone number. Call me, or email me. And it turns out he did. And this is a very well-known blogger in my space. And today he has our widget on his site. Right? Just because we were able to engage in a dialogue. And I think that's phenomenal, right? And
it's,
I think
great
each
that
one
Erickson
of us have good examples. Let's go to Mary.
I wanted to know if the permatan was a tattoo or it required maintenance. my question
is, I have Mediterranean blood, for God's only Mary can.
I wondered if any of the three of you guys had any ideas about how to get marketers or brand managers or advertising agencies to pay for attention in a meaningful way instead of trying to still get eyeballs and CPMs.
So a metric by which attention and or maybe influence could be measured and therefore valued, right?
Or maybe not even measured. I mean, a measurement implies that there's some kind of algorithmic way that you can do this. And I'm wondering if there's something that, you know, based on a judgment even, or something that, so that we can basically pull people out of the broadcast mode of advertising and into that many-to-many conversation,
Mary,
that you're talking
about.
You're
saying the concept of CPM equals influence as opposed to CPM equaling reach and page views.
Well, CPM is kind of an eyeball sort of a concept, right? And I think that attention or engagement, real engagement, not like, oh, people just looked at something, but engagement where somebody really does something that's meaningful, that's a kind of attention that is, there's no difference between that and somebody just looking at something. So how do we get those people to treat that as being more meaningful and spend more money for that?
Yes. In other words, like, all day we think about this. You know, CPM is how the industry works. CPM is the bridge that hopefully gets us somewhere else. But when I watch, for example, there's a campaign, some of you may have seen it, DICE did a campaign, the IT Jobs Board, and they turned this tower into an IM chat that anybody who interacted with the banner could put their conversation into, and then it showed up in the window above. And the window was streaming with a bunch of, you know, who knows how many people saying things. And the question at the top, the invitation was, does your tech job suck? And lots of people have things to say about that. So, and they're an IT jobs board. So it was just a perfect execution, right? And the engagement on that was really high. Once people decided to shift from whatever they were, I think they ran it on Dig and a bunch of other sites, and into the banner, the engagement, average engagement time, which they could judge by active click strokes in the JavaScript, was 7 minutes and 41 seconds, which is about 7 minutes longer than anyone spends on any blog post, usually, unless it's someone actually reading the one I just wrote. That would be 7 hours. But it's really, it was extraordinary. And that campaign won an award, Mary, that MediaPost or someone gave them. And as part of the justification for the award was engagement, the amount of engagement. And I'm seeing that more and more creep into the lexicon and the grammar of marketing, which is, you know, trying to figure out and measure engagement. And we work on that a lot too. We actually tried to create an engagement index by sort of mashing up Technorati and and you know, and a bunch of other you know, PageRank, and in trying to show that there is an active, engaged audience, and therefore it's worth more to be in some kind of conversation with them. But it's as early days, and so we're not quite at what might be a standard for that.
Next question.
Hi. First off, for my $20,000 friend there, I would send out $10,000 worth of free stuff to influential bloggers and celebrities. That's the first thing I would do.
That'd be the Sonos strategy.
Yeah, and the TiVo strategy, yeah. And you know, it worked for them. And hey, who doesn't like free stuff? I am an art director and strategist at a marketing firm, and I have a client that is a who will remain nameless, but they're a they have a cable modem ISP that we shill for them. We want them to play nice with the new web in their marketing strategy.
When you say a cable modem ISP, you said you're talking about a cable company?
Yes.
Okay.
But I specifically work on the cable, on the internet service.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. We want them to
play nice.
Yeah, play nice with the new web. And there is a vast corporate cultural divide between them and not just us, but or not us as an agency, but us in this room. Anything you can do to help me cross this bridge, help our company, really, because it's really becoming a broad-reaching client issue, and we feel like we're hitting them with guns blazing.
So I just want to understand the conflict. So you're trying to get the leopard to change its spots?
Well, here's an example of their current... This will help put it into perspective. Current online strategy for them is to create a series of banner ads every quarter that are then shipped out to marketing teams all over the country. That's the end of the story. So you can see, I mean, we're probably, I think I can hear the keyboards tapping, that there's a gap between that and what we would all either like to see as contemporary mm-hmm. marketing
right.
that plays nice
is
with.
Is there anybody on their team that is sort of on the new media side, or is it sort of a complete disconnect?
I unfortunately have to plead that there's a, without insulting my client, that there's a bit of corporate dysfunction in that regard. So the left hand may not be talking to the right hand in that case, which is, again, puts us in a hard spot because we're trying to move them forward, but even on their end, we're not quite finding the tools. The biggest challenge we're having is convincing them that these new forms of marketing, these new communities that we can engage with are valuable, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, and that it'll ultimately result in, it'll positively benefit the bottom line.
Yeah, well, I believe it absolutely will. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the point of marketing, right, is to put your yeah. products out there and sell more of them and get into a deeper relationship that is ultimately beneficial to everybody. You know, you don't give your money to somebody and buy something unless you think you're getting some value, right? And so it is about, and you're making a very good point, and if you ever, if anyone gets to the bottom of that 4,200-word post, you'll note at the end that I'm working on the sequel to the last book, and the book is, the working title is The Conversation Economy, because I really think that if you don't know how to have that conversation, you can put a banner up, and if someone clicks through and then nothing happens, or you don't know how to move that person through an interface where they're getting what they came to pay for, you're gone. You're done. And people increasingly expect that, right? I mean, Amazon's and Lord knows everyone in this room, all the stuff that, you know, Twittering and Flickering and all the stuff that we're doing is, you know, training a whole generation of people to expect that the world reorganizes on intent as we move through it, right? And companies that are still used to the kind of like, well, you just owe me some money because I've got the monopoly in your local area. You know, that approach hopefully will be overturned.
I think specifically to this, it's just, it takes a while, and I think to do the same thing he does, where you said earlier, it's like still 80% of the marketing is pretty traditional, and you hope to get to 75 and in the 70s. So you just carve out a little bit with a client that is excited about it and really focus on trying to make that work and have a case study that then you can show somebody else. And
yeah, exactly.
Just build the momentum. And
yeah, baby steps.
With
yeah.
And I mean, and it literally, this is terrible for our publishers because, I mean, there's nothing more impatient than a publisher, you know, who's saying, where's the money? But it takes 6 months from the time I'll sit down with somebody and we'll have a brainstorm, probably with someone like you in the room, right? And we get all excited about a new execution like the Semantic RSS or the DICE or whatever it is. It takes 6 months till that idea is sold back and comes back from the client and creative, and then it actually becomes a buy. And then it's usually a tiny little test buy to sticking a toe in the water to see if everything's going to be okay. So it just takes... marketing cycles are usually annual with quarterly refresh. So it takes time to move these cycles.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Let's roll to the next question here.
Wow, he's a lot taller than I am. My name is Amelia G. I own Blue Blood, which is a counterculture lifestyle and erotica company, which I founded in 1982. Blue Blood's print incarnation got tons of press, but I found it more difficult to get coverage online. Meanwhile, folks who've ripped off my rhetoric word for word, who came out and watched me shoot pictures and literally took notes, they've gotten mad press. When I kind of looked into it, apparently a lot of it was paid placement. But I think it did shape a lot of public perception. I don't want to get covered in a way which lacks integrity. I don't want to have people say things about me that aren't true. But I think I have an interesting product, and I don't really know how does one reach out to the blogosphere that same way, because, you know, when I wanted to get press in a magazine, you look at the address and, you know, you mail them free stuff, like the gentleman before me said, but a lot of times on a blog, it's not obvious. Like, Boing Boing covered it when we launched our clothing line.
Right.
And I was like, wow, thanks, and I wanted to send Corey free stuff, but there was no obvious way to do that. And I'm not sure what the online etiquette is, if it's not all paid for placement, if a lot of people do care about the integrity aspect, like,
right.
How do you reach out to those people? Do you buy an ad at the top of the thing and they eventually click through and they're like, oh, this is pretty interesting. Like, sort of what is appropriate?
Well, this is not part of my standard sales pitch, but marketers have told me that sometimes they do purchase advertising on certain blogs because they're trying to get the attention of the actual blogger. And that's been, there are a number of well-known sites that are in the FM stable where I would say marketers are actually doing that for that reason. I'm not advocating that, but, you know, it's been done. But I think that the key thing is
there's a growing backlash on that.
Yeah, and right? I agree. I don't think that's a sustainable model, frankly. However, what is sustainable is what Tony's suggesting is like you getting into the conversation. In other words, the thing that most bloggers do notice is when they get quality links from other sites. They usually notice that. And so if and that's the conversation. So if you know, like for example, I don't know how the folks at Boing Boing noticed your site and linked to it when you had the new line of clothing, did you say?
Well, we did some Blue Blood branded clothing to go with the membership sites
cool.
and
okay.
the sort of online journalism stuff.
But there is almost all sites mm-hmm. have a contact and I know that with every site that we work
I've had amazingly minimal luck with just dropping a line to an email and saying,
yeah.
hey, can I put you on our comp list, whatever. So
yeah.
I feel like there's some piece of etiquette that I'm missing.
No,
I don't think it is.
I think you're putting your finger on a real opportunity out there for somebody to find a way to make that happen in a way that doesn't generate backlash. I think the only way to get a blogger's attention right now is if you happen to have traffic yourself or some kind of influence, you link to them
myself.
And then you get into that back and forth. I think that's a great way to get somebody's attention. It's like, oh wow, somebody linked to me and they're sending me traffic.
I think all
everything
yeah.
anything
yeah.
else right now.
Well, it's not just traffic, but it's something additive. I mean, I can tell you from like I'm the band manager of Boing Boing. That's my title with Boing Boing.
Which is a good title.
And it's a cool title. My favorite. I can tell you from working with them for the last 3 years that what they really pay attention to is when something is additive to what they find interesting to begin with. So, you know, it seems to be the only constant in what all of them post about is when they see something that they just think is really interesting or additive. And it sometimes it's a product, and oftentimes, you know, when we meet or talk, they say, yeah, you know, I got an email from X, Y, and Z, and we sent them a ton of traffic, and they sold out in like a day and a half. And man, wouldn't it be cool if we could figure out a way to make money on that? But then it always goes, no, that would actually be really bad if we sold that. That's the secret sauce. You can't do that. That's wrong. But, you know, but there is, so that's the problem, is it's solving for that isn't simple. Obviously, PaperPost is attempting to address that. But
I just feel like PaperPost would end up being something where
I think
you're
devolving
what
evil.
Someone says too much. And just as a journalist myself, I'm not
we'll
comfortable with
it.
Let's
not end the panel on that.
I'm sorry.
But sort of, so basically,
look,
y'all,
I mean,
don't really have a suggestion.
Well,
how
I mean,
reach out on that.
There are any number of suggestions. I just don't know if they're appropriate to you. But one of them would be, you know, study the work of Mark Benioff at Salesforce.com. I mean, there are certain people who are deeply good at getting attention, and actually behind that attention have really interesting things to say. And so the folks that are good at that tend to be the ones that get the attention of the quality sites.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Hi, I work for a software company. Our team is here, and we pretty much...
You know what? I'm going to interrupt. We're being asked to vacate the premises. But if you come up here,
okay,
we'll answer your question personally. How's that? And anybody else who has any questions?
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.